Hello and welcome to Four Panel. We are the podcast all about comics, graphic novels, manga, other things, what have got pictures and words arranged in some sort of fashion, and movies and TV shows thereof, all here on the Geek Show Podcast Network. I'm Andrew, and as always, I am joined by my lovely co-host, Rob.
Hello, I am lovely.
You are. Although this is probably the one time I'm going to say that, because I would like to mention that I am drugged the hell up.
Yes, lots of codeine.
Yes, lovely codeine to combat my bad back.
Which happened for some reason. You're not actually sure why.
Through much strenuous activity, such as placing a laptop down on a table.
Yep, codeine. Lots of lovely codeine.
Yay, codeine.
So, anyway, we'll leave the laptops and stuff to one side, out of your reach, so you don't do any more damage to your back. And also, my phone is off to one side because last weekend I picked my phone up and did my shoulder in very similar, under very similar circumstances.
To lift the heavy weight of a tiny mobile phone.
Yeah, and by tiny we mean it's not even it weighs like grams. It doesn't weigh anything. I don't know how I managed to do that. So we'll leave those to one side. We're not going to go near them for the duration of the show. Instead, we're going to go into the news, and the Arrow TV series is getting a new crime-fighting person.
You mean a new vigilante?
Yes, called Vigilante.
That's just not trying with the name, is it?
Yeah. See, in the early Arrow series, they called Oliver Queen's character the Vigilante. But now they're going to have an actual vigilante called Vigilante. The new vigilante is going to be Adrian Chase, who is Star City's new district attorney. And he is also going to be the anti-hero Vigilante. So basically, he's DC's Daredevil.
Yeah, he is exactly Daredevil.
And yeah, I don't understand where Arrow is going from here, because it just seems like they're, I don't know, I don't understand it. Star City can't have that much crime. It's not Gotham.
To be honest, I don't care anymore. I gave up on Arrow.
I mean, right, the whole thing with Deathstroke was fine. That actually made sense to a degree. It went a bit bonkers towards the end with an army of mini Deathstrokes, but it made sense to a degree, right? And then there's the whole thing with the League of Assassins and then everything else, and then, you know, Black Canary, White Canary, Brown Canary. That sounds wrong.
I'm disappointed there isn't a Yellow Canary.
We could have a full-on penitent ad of canaries. Anyway, it's kind of...
We could have the Canary Rangers.
I just got a mental image of little birds with giant crash helmets now. And, yeah, leaving that to one side, leaving the little birds with giant crash helmets to one side, Vigilante, what do we know about Vigilante from DC?
He is the one who wasn't a cowboy and wasn't a woman.
No, he was a woman at one point, because Vigilante is one of those weird ones.
Yeah, there's been approximately like 20 Vigilantes.
Yeah, and at one point it was a woman who I think used to be a police officer. I think it was the Batman Deathstroke crossover called City of Assassins. And I think she was a Gotham police officer. And then at the end of City of Assassins, apparently she'd seen too much death and horror, realized that the only way she could deal with it was to basically become a vigilante who was a cross between Daredevil and Punisher and take out crime with a gun. And so she donned the mask of Vigilante to help Deathstroke. And then her and Deathstroke became an item for a little bit. And then, yeah, because Batman actually says to her, the last person who wore this mask met a bad end.
It's, I think that was Adrian Chase, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
who,
so.
Who I believe killed himself.
Yeah, because Batman actually says to her, I think weirdly enough, if I recall City of Assassins, it might have been Batman who actually gave her the Vigilante costume.
Bit weird then.
I'll have to check. We've got City of Assassins on the shelf over there, so I'll check on that. But I do know Batman actually told her the last person who wore that mask. I actually know it was Deathstroke who gave her the Vigilante costume, and Batman caught her, took the mask off her, and then said to her, the last person who wore this mask.
See, that makes more sense.
You know, did he take the mask? I can't remember. But Batman caught her and said to her, the last person who wore this mask met a bad end. I'm pretty sure about that. In fact, I'm very sure about that. So, yeah, this is Adrian Chase, who is pre-Batman.
Yes, I was right. Apparently Vigilante killed himself at the end of a series.
Yeah.
Then it was Patricia Trace, who was the second one.
Yeah. She was a cop, wasn't she, originally?
Yeah, yeah. Rogue Gotham City police detective who teams up with Deathstroke.
Yeah. So I was right. Vindicated. Whoa. I remembered. My memory works.
And then, oh, wow, that was like even more than I thought.
What?
Because, like I said, there was the cowboy one.
Yeah.
Then we had Adrian. Then we had Pat. Then we had Justin Powell. And apparently the most recent one is Dorian Chase. What a name.
Is he the son of Adrian Chase?
It's like a big paragraph. I've got to read it, Rob.
You don't need to read it. I just want to know if he's the son of Adrian Chase.
I don't know. It doesn't actually say. You'd assume he would be like some sort of relation.
Or maybe he's the younger brother of Adrian Chase.
Something like that.
Maybe it was Adrian and Dorian. Two brothers unite.
No, it does not say. You failed me, Wikipedia.
Okay. Wikipedia has failed, so we're going to move on. Vigilante is going to be in Arrow, so Arrow is going to get another vigilante. It's going to be a team of vigilantes in Arrow, keeping Star City safe. So Star City is now the safest city in the DC universe when it comes to general crime.
Actually, who's going to play Vigilante? I don't think we actually said. We got sidetracked.
The guy who's going to be playing Adrian Chase is Josh Segarra, who was in Chicago PD. So he's going to be joining Arrow for the fifth season as Adrian Chase. And Echo Kellum, who plays Curtis Holt, is going to be promoted to a series regular.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, because he's Mr. Terrific.
They have a Mr. Terrific?
They do. They introduce Mr. And they made a reference to it in literally the most cheesiest way possible. I think there's a bit where, Felicity's in a wheelchair until he invents some magic, makes her walk again microchip.
Why is
Felicity? Because shut up, Robert, he just did.
No, why was she in a wheelchair?
Oh, because she got shot. They tried to make her like Barbara Gordon for a bit, and then no one cared, and she got better. But anyway, the important bit is that when he does that, Oliver turns and goes, "Well, Curtis, this is terrific." I think that was the point I gave up on Arrow.
That's the point I'd actually give up on life. I'm sorry, but that's just terrible.
Can we move on now?
Yes, we can.
Move on while I shake my head. Such disappointment.
Over to you.
Oh, yeah, it is my turn. Probably put a spoiler warning at the beginning of this, because I'm about to spoil the first issue of Civil War 2, even though it's been quite well publicized.
Yeah, it has been all over the place.
Yeah, so yeah, basically it was War Machine and She-Hulk. They dead.
So what?
They deaded. They done got murderized. Deadification has set in on both of them.
Okay, how?
Right, so basically, Civil War 2, it's about this new Inhuman who can, see glimpses of the future. And basically, he sees Thanos about to attack Earth. So the Ultimates and War Machine and She-Hulk have tagged along for reasons. They say, "We're going to go stop him." And then, Thanos just punches a fist right through War Machine. And,
okay.
And this is the bit that was done. War Machine, before that, fires a rocket at Thanos, but it, misses and hits She-Hulk.
Hang on. War Machine fires a rocket that misses and hits She-Hulk.
Yeah, and that's apparently enough to, put her in critical condition, and then at the end of issue one, she flatlines.
So War Machine fires a rocket that hits She-Hulk and puts her in a critical condition. She-Hulk, who is pretty much invulnerable to everything because she's She-Hulk, cousin of the Hulk,
yeah,
who is actually invulnerable to just about everything.
I don't know, because I feel like that's the kind of thing that they could easily explain away with, one line if they just had said, oh, yeah, we gave War Machine, anti-Thanos rockets or whatever.
Yeah, armor-piercing rounds, special armor-piercing rounds. That's all you need to say. They're coated in adamantium or vibranium, yeah, or something like that.
Because that's not the kind of thing War Machine would usually be packing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're dead. It's all very sad. And they're definitely dead forever and ever and ever, and we'll never see them again.
You reckon?
Yep, I completely reckon. That's it.
But then I've got a question, because Jennifer is working as a lawyer, yeah?
Yep.
So, and we see a lot of her lawyering and stuff like that in the Patsy Walker comics. So how is that going to affect Patsy Walker?
I assume she's going to have to, find another lawyer for a couple of months until Jen gets better.
Okay. Or is Patsy Walker going to, are they going to do that? Ooh, that'd be interesting. Because Patsy Walker was dead for a while, and then she got better.
She was, so yeah, that could actually be a pretty interesting storyline then.
Patsy actually going to save Jennifer would be an interesting storyline.
Oh, see, I thought you just meant, something about her coming to terms with it, but yeah, just her going into the afterlife.
Yeah. Because she, you know, she does have that mystical, weird stuff going on. She still doesn't fully understand all her abilities. And she's got, like, she's got close connections with quite a lot of odd people who are way, way, way overpowered for their own good.
I feel like this is the big problem with death in comic books.
Yeah.
We've got to the point where people can just go, oops, someone died. Best go grab their soul from hell or heaven or whatever.
Do you know what it is? I've actually thought about this for a long, long time. What it is that comic books have reached that weird cosmic stage where they are basically like Greek mythology or Norse mythology or Egyptian mythology even, where the underworld, you know, the world of the dead is basically like a department store.
Yeah.
And but it's not like your typical kind of Debenhams or BHS or anything else, save BHS, by the way. It's more like Harrods. So you can only go in if you're wearing the right clothing or if you have the right equipment.
That's why you can't just go casually save everyone.
Exactly. You know? And it's also, because it's like Harrods, everything is kind of jumbled up because, you know, apparently that's how it's done at places like Liberty's and Howard and Harrods and Selfridges. I've been in those places. And trust me, if you're trying to find specific things, ask the people. Don't try and look for it yourself, because you'll never find it.
Yes. That's why Dr. Doom could never save his mother's soul from hell.
Yeah, because
he couldn't find the right aisle and he refused to ask one of the shop assistants for help.
Because he's a man, and men exactly. never ask for directions. If they did female Dr. Doom, first thing female Dr. Doom would have done was find the information desk and ask.
As in to draw it on a map for her.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why. Because if you think about it, how many Greek heroes went to the world of the dead and came back with people?
Yeah, just popped down for a little visit.
You know, Orpheus, I think Perseus did as well. Theseus, possibly. I know that Odysseus did because he met Achilles in the underworld.
And then one time Hercules went down at a bit of rough and tumble with Cerberus.
Yeah.
Just because he could.
Well, that wasn't the only time, because there was another time when he actually went down to rescue his wife's soul.
Oh, yeah. But basically every Greek hero does that at some point.
Yeah. So I think that comic books have reached that weird kind of meta-cosmic stage. And do you know who I blame for that?
Who do you blame?
Superman.
Actually, yes, because as Max Landis pointed out, he broke death.
Yeah. He broke death. Oh, no. He didn't break death. Whoever wrote The Death of Superman and, you know, Rise of the Supermen broke death in comic books. Since then, it's so easy for superheroes to come back to life.
See, I don't think it's that is the problem. The problem is the fact that they still treat death like it's in any way important.
Well, all I'm waiting for with comic books, right, literally all I'm waiting for with superhero comic books now when it comes to death is for them to introduce the MacGuffin, the Dragon Ball. All they need is that now. And then they've basically gone the whole hog and everything has become Dragon Ball.
At least if they had something like the Dragon Ball, they could standardize the death.
Yeah.
And just be like, right, this person is dead. This is what we need to do to get them. Because, you know, Nightcrawler was dead.
Yeah.
Nightcrawler just decided he didn't want to be dead anymore and came back to life.
Yeah, how does that happen?
He teleported out of heaven is how that happens.
Yeah. My point exactly.
That's how Kurt Wagner rolls.
Yeah, but he, you know, that's kind of badass when you think about it. He actually didn't rely on anybody else. He teleported out of heaven, went, yeah, I'm tired of this. That's fine. I've got no problem with Nightcrawler doing that. If Nightcrawler wants to do that, I'll support him all the way, you know, because he's not asking me for anything. I'm not having to open any portals or go fight monsters or get like some cosmic weird thing.
That's true. Nightcrawler can solve his own problems.
Yeah. As he's always done, which is one of the reasons I love Nightcrawler.
He's like my favourite X-Man.
That Nightcrawler has... reasons why Nightcrawler is the best X-Man. He has the best accent.
Yes, he does.
Right? He fights with rapiers.
Yes. Rapiers, like, straight up inspired by Errol Flynn movies.
Exactly. And he can fight with two of them as well.
Like, I'm pretty sure he could conceivably fight with, like, three.
Probably. The prehensile tail and all.
Yeah, that's about four then. So I think he could probably like hold one in one of his feet.
Oh yeah, he could. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I want to see that. I want to see that fight. Nightcrawler fighting with... No, because he wouldn't need to use his tail. He could actually just hang from his tail and fight with hands and feet. He is, aside from certain issues with Colossus, he is probably the single most honourable and noble of the X-Men, when you get right down to it. And that honour and nobility, people often misunderstand the whole principle of it. It's basically, look, if you're my friend, I will I will kill for you, I will die for you. But if you're my enemy, if you threaten the people that I care about, I will be absolutely merciless.
In essence, what you're saying is that Nightcrawler's entire life model is that everything I do it for you.
Yes.
Because you did straight up quote that song.
Yes, I did. Well, no, the song doesn't actually say I'd kill for you. Saying says I'd die for you. I'm like, well, yeah, okay. But how about killing for them as well? Is anyone actually willing to go that far?
So reason number four why Nightcrawler is awesome. He could rock that song on karaoke night.
Yes, he could. With his accent, he'd be amazing.
Yes.
And so, also, reason number five, he can teleport.
Yes.
You know, Wolverine might have adamantium crawls, but he's got to hit Nightcrawler first.
I think it's like one of the best moments in Age of Apocalypse, where they had like their version of Deadpool was like an assassin.
Yeah.
Nightcrawler just comes up, grabs his head, teleports it off. Job done.
Yes. See, that's amazing. So yeah, several reasons why Nightcrawler is the best X-Man.
What were we even talking about?
I've forgotten. I just love Nightcrawler.
So in conclusion, Nightcrawler is the best.
Yes. Moving on to DC, who are still trying to publicize the Suicide Squad movie.
They're really going all in on this one, aren't they?
They are. On Free Comic Book Day, they tried to publicize the Suicide Squad movie by giving away issue one of Suicide Squad on Free Comic Book Day. Now they're attempting the same thing again, because DC are going to be given...
Oh, Rob, important enough to, like, ban this whole thing.
Oh?
It is also revealed that Dorian is the brother of the late Adrian Chase.
Ah.
It was hidden halfway through the wall of text.
Is this like one of those weird pictures where you have to take a step back and then you suddenly see the picture?
It's actually exactly like that, because I was leaning back in my chair when I saw it.
Anyway, yeah. So DC are still trying to publicize the new Suicide Squad movie. I think the hype train has really died down for this after Batman versus Superman. So DC are going back to their old thing of, we gave away Suicide Squad issue one, so let's give away another issue of Suicide Squad. But which one can we give away? I know. Let's give away Harley Quinn and the Suicide Squad April Fool's Special number one. Please do not make a number two.
For as much as we hated it, I can kind of understand why, since it was like a one-off thing.
That's what I mean. I didn't hate it. I just think it just didn't make a jot of sense, because all of it was basically a nonsense. If they'd basically not put the last bit in, it would have actually been a good single-issue comic of Harley just going off on a rampage but thinking that she's helping people. But it turns out that that's not the case, because Amanda Waller has got Harley in this weird machine and Harley is being brainwashed to think superheroes are evil. Like, ooh, why are you showing me this? That does not make sense. But apparently it's all to do with the Suicide Squad, because the Suicide Squad has to be in there. You couldn't just do this as a single-issue Harley Quinn comic.
It's okay, because now we get to read it again. And I'll get us all excited for the Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah,
also
I know.
Also featuring some other people.
Yeah, because it's Harley Quinn. And Harley Quinn is... DC, seriously, stop putting all of your eggs in one basket and that basket being called Harley Quinn, you know? There's no point in trying to use Harley Quinn's eggs to spawn more superheroes, because number one, Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy are an item. We know this. And number two, she's more likely to hit you with a hammer if you try anything funny like that.
Exactly. She is going to be the one hitting that.
Yes. What he said. Seriously, though. If you're gonna publicize Suicide Squad, do a Deadshot single-issue comic. Do a Killer Shark single-issue comic.
I think they did do like a Deadshot and Katana miniseries.
Yeah, they did
ago.
A Deadshot and Katana miniseries, but do a Deadshot single issue. Do a King Shark single issue. What's his face? The fiery guy, Mexican guy.
Oh yeah, El Diablo.
El Diablo. Do a El Diablo single issue. Do those single issue comics. You know, that all kind of complement each other, because we know how they all ended up working for Waller. We've seen all that, but do something else.
Yeah, I thought that would actually work quite well to introduce who the characters are.
Yeah, and so that would be my idea. And if you want to do those as kind of limited runs, or even just say, okay, this is a free online issue, because then you don't have the print costs or anything like that, do you? It'd still work.
That'd actually be a really smart idea.
See? I'm smart, DC. I've done advertising and marketing before. I have ideas. You should hire me. I could take over from Jim Lee.
That's because Jim Lee is not smarter than the average bear.
I am not. I was just thinking about that statement. I was like, hang on.
To be fair to you, though, bears are pretty crafty.
Yes, they are. You know, they've always...
I mean, have you tried catching salmon as it jumps out of a river? It's hard.
Yeah, well, not only that, I've never once been able to steal someone's picnic basket.
So I think we should be in awe of any culture that has worked out a system where it gets to just sleep through half a year.
Yeah. I mean, that beats every student I've ever met.
That is basically utopia.
On that note, we're going to take a very quick break while we take a nap.
Hi! Don't you just hate it when you're really getting into the groove of a good show and it cuts for adverts? We at The Geek Show agree, which is why we only do adverts for ourselves. On the box, we're just great.
This is Andy from Literary Lightroom, telling you to go and listen to us where we literally lighter about everything literary. With far too much lightering.
Hi everyone, welcome back, and now we're going to be talking about comics!
Yay, comics, what we have read with our eyes.
And I'm going to throw a manga in as well.
A manga on the manga show?
Yeah, a manga
what
on
madness
the manga
is show. This?
It's totally insanity. I'm freaking out, man, it's too real! Anyway, are you going to start us off?
I will. So, I've been reading something that I've been meaning to talk about for a while now. It's Venom Space Knight.
I've been interested in reading this because obviously I'm a big fan of ROM, the original ROM Space Knight. So anything that has the word Space Knight.
Yes, and I think it was like deliberately named after ROM as sort of a spiritual successor-esque type thing.
Yeah.
So we are 8 issues in now, written by Robbie Thompson, art by Ariel Olivetti. It's basically, because I think I need to do a bit of backstory because it's based on a very, very stupid Guardians of the Galaxy storyline. Basically, Venom joined the Guardians of the Galaxy and went to the planet of the symbiotes, who basically just, like, cured Venom of its anger or something.
Okay.
Anyway, that was stupid. And they made Venom an agent of the cosmos. So he's basically like a space policeman. He goes around to planets solving problems and what such. So first 6 issues, kind of the initial storyline. And it was a lot of fun. It was kind of mostly just Venom going to various planets, solving problems, having fun, kind of meeting his supporting cast. You've got 208, or is it 20-something, a number. He is basically his robot that, like, pilots the ship. 803, Unit 803. That is basically the robot who pilots his ship. I love 803, because he's suicidally depressed.
What is he, Marvin?
He's basically Marvin. Like, he keeps begging Flash for the sweet release of death.
That's just strange.
It is strange and quite wonderful. So you've got him, meets a character called, like, Ika, I think it's like IQA.
Okay.
So she's like the warrior queen of a planet of sort of Medusa people. So she's like a red-skinned woman with snakes for hair. He also meets Tana, who is another symbiote user and agent of the cosmos, who's basically kind of Venom's parole officer.
Okay.
Like, she's there to make sure the symbiote doesn't wig out again and go crazy. The most recent member of the crew joint is Piccolo, the space panda.
See, when you say Piccolo, I'm thinking, is this some weird version of Piccolo from Dragon Ball?
She does love fighting. She's kind of basically Panda Piccolo.
Hang on, she?
Yeah, she.
Fighting space panda?
Yes.
Female fighting space panda?
Yes.
Called Piccolo?
Yes.
I need to see a picture of this. How do you spell it? Is it P-I-C?
That's P-I-K.
R-O-L-O?
No, R-O-double-L-O.
R-O-double-L-O, okay. Piccolo.
It's 2 words.
Oh, okay. Piccolo. Paul, we found your waifu. Now, seriously, a spacefaring fighting panda woman. But this is an actual panda woman, as in looks like a panda, but is female.
Yeah, I mean, technically she's not a panda. She's like an alien that's got a lemur taily thing. But Flash calls her a panda because she looks like a panda.
Ah, I was thinking Paul might have found his waifu.
No, she is not Poe's waifu, because she is the panda that kills you.
Okay, right, so Piccolo.
So yeah, anyway, that's kind of the first six issues. They're going to traverse around space, having fun and adventures. The big bad of that is the space pirate Mercurio, and he wants the symbiote for himself. And basically, Flash just gives it to him with the idea that, like, him and the symbiote have built up a bond now, that it can kind of trick him and beat him.
Yeah.
But while he's doing that, Mercurio basically says to the symbiote, you know, traversing around the galaxy, this isn't what you are. You're a monster. Like, you're full of rage. So now we've kind of had the last two issues, which is 7 and 8, which is where this comic has actually got really interesting, because basically Tana, the like symbiote parole officer, she comes and says, basically, we can feel the rage in your symbiote increasing and increasing, so we're going to take it from you and get your replacement. And they start arguing because Flash is like, no, this is my friend now.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just, you know, kill him and give me another one. And while they're doing that, Venom just freaks the hell out, like slices Tana's symbiote in half and flies off in the spaceship. And they go chasing after him. And then we get to issue 8, which things suddenly get super dark. Because, like, basically, they go back to all the planets like they went through in the first storyline to find basically Venom's destroyed them all.
Okay.
Because he's basically trying to make a point that, no, this is wrong. I'm an agent of chaos.
Yeah.
This is like the universe's true natural state is like death and destruction.
Yeah.
And basically, Flash kind of tracks him to a space bar. Like, kind of Venom tries to make him, kind of tries to give him a drink because Flash is a recovering alcoholic. Basically gives him a spiel about, you know, you're not a good person. Like that while he's saying that, kind of, you get all these flashbacks to sort of him bullying Peter Parker in school, like him yelling at Betty Brant because they used to go out for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're actually this bad guy filled with anger. And issue 8 ends with the symbiote taking him basically to the home planet of his first host, taking him up to a grave that has just Flash Thompson written on it, and saying, it's time you learn who you really are. And just, it ends with the symbiote kind of pulling Flash into the grave, and you see, like, one hand sticking out.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm really into this series. It's really cool.
So Flash Thompson was the original owner
of
the symbiote?
No. This is a grave that the symbiote has made for Flash, kind of just as, like, a big symbolic thing.
Okay. So when did the symbiote make it?
I assume while Flash was chasing after him.
Okay, right. That makes sense then.
Because he had a pretty decent head start.
Yeah, this is true. Okay, interesting. I think I'm going to have to pick this up because this is sounding very, very intriguing. It's got my attention.
Yeah, I mean, fun. It was just like, it was a fun, pulpy space adventure.
Yeah, kind of like Rocket and Groot.
Yeah, but now I like that they're bringing some of the darker symbiote stuff in.
Yeah. I wasn't sure how I felt about Rocket and Groot. When you got to the whole reveal that the poorly telegraphed or really well telegraphed reveal that the ruler of that planet was actually Rocket is kind of the worst kept secret in that comic was that. Because you could tell it was him straight away.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I don't think it was meant to be that big a secret. Yeah.
I just love the alternate version of Rocket and Groot.
It's Pockets, Possum, and Shrub.
Yeah. Yes. Me, Ash, Shrub. I am Groot. Me, Ash, Shrub.
I like Rocket and Groot.
Do you know what it reminded me of? You remember I Am Weasel?
Yes, and I Am Groot.
Yeah. It just reminded me of that. So, anyway, moving on. And I've been reading Patty Walker issue 7, right? Now, issue 7 is the last bit of this kind of, as I'm assuming it's the initial arc before Civil War II.
Yeah.
Right. And the whole thing with Patsy Walker up to now has been she's coming back to terms with being alive again, you know, and not being in hell. She's got weird powers. She still doesn't know the full extent of her abilities, but she's generally trying to make every day count because she knows just how precious every day is, finally. And this issue is a bit of a weird one now. I know that you didn't like the artwork
issue. I couldn't make it more than like halfway through the issue.
And I kind of agree with you because there's certain bits where it just looks like it's been drawn by a five-year-old with a crayon. And in fact, not a very talented five-year-old with a crayon.
Five-year-old with a crayon and a severe head injury.
I would have just gone with not a very good five-year-old with a crayon. The kind of 5-year-old with a crayon who's more likely to shove the crayon up his nose.
Right, 5-year-old with a crayon held in its feet.
Yes. Okay, yeah. That makes more sense, though. But anyway, some bits of it look like that. But generally, the story was actually quite interesting. And I generally, you know, I could overlook the artwork for the fact that at the end of the previous issue, Jessica Jones was introduced as helping Hedy.
Yeah, no, I was really excited to read that one.
For some reason, there's this gap, right? There's a weird gap. And it turns out that Jessica Jones is now suddenly working for Jennifer and Patsy instead. Like, well, hang on, how did this happen? And the whole basis of it is simply that Jessica Jones, former superhero, all the stuff with the Purple Man happened. Now she's got a good life with Luke Cage, with her daughter, and her daughter's a big fan of Patsy Walker, right? So because her daughter's a big fan of Patsy Walker, she has basically taken it upon herself to work with Patsy and Jennifer instead of with Hedy.
That's quite adorable.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't like the way they've drawn Luke Cage in this, by the way, because he looks like an overweight middle-aged man. And that's not the Luke Cage that I know.
He's let himself go a little bit.
Yeah, especially around the waist area. Patsy and Jennifer are working with Jessica Jones, and Jessica decides that she's going to try and figure out what's going on and basically do a little bit of investigating in Hedy's apartment. She doesn't get anywhere because Hedy's a bit too smart. But then Jennifer's still digging, and Patsy does a book signing. And, you know, there's all the fans are coming to meet the real Patsy Walker. Everyone's going, yay, the real Patsy Walker. And the two who actually took that photo of Patsy and put it on the internet in the first place, she has a little bit of a go at them, but, one of her friends says, look, just chill. And so these two are like, we're really sorry, and start going away, you know, quite upset because they didn't realize they were just really excited about seeing Patsy Walker. You know, they didn't really want to cause her any trouble or any kind of harm. They just did it because they love Patsy Walker. And so Patsy says to them, do you want to take a selfie? And then all of a sudden they're happy again. So that works quite well. And the main point of this issue was more about Patsy coming to terms with certain things from her past and certain misconceptions that she had from her past. The primary one being about her mum. And this is one of the things that actually quite surprised me, given how bad some of the artwork is in this. What's quite surprised me was the strength of the actual depth of the story. Patsy always hated her mum because, as far as Patsy was concerned, her mum was the one who tried to extend her own life by sacrificing Patsy's life instead, which is one of the reasons that led to Patsy eventually killing herself, because her mum basically tried to make a deal with a demon to basically extend her own life and sacrifice Patsy instead. And so she's grown up with this weird hatred of her own mother. She didn't understand why the rights to her own stuff, her mother didn't include her in any of the contracts or the rights or anything like that, but instead had other people doing that. And this issue actually clarifies a lot of that stuff, because what had actually happened, and Jennifer digs this out as well, because Jessica and Patsy go to raid Hedy's apartment when she's gone out, apparently, because they want to know what's inside this drawer. They think it might be something important. So they get there. They get outside the building, and Patsy's looking up and going, how do we get up? And Jessica just jumps up, because she can. And Patsy just looks at her and goes, show off, and then just does all these acrobatic stuff to get to the top. So they're in there, and then Hedy turns up. Her little dog starts biting Patsy's leg, and Patsy lets her have both barrels. And Hedy says, well, I was more like a daughter to your mother than you were, kind of thing. All these old wounds are starting to be dredged up. And then Jennifer has actually found something very interesting. Phones Jessica, and Jessica goes, okay, that's interesting. And says to Hedy, you know all those contracts that you have been throwing around saying that you own the rights to this stuff because you had Patsy's mother's signature? And Hedy goes, yep. Goes, well, they're all void.
Oh, dear.
And Hedy goes, no, they're not. She says, yes, they are. And then goes on to explain that Patsy's mother was, because of the amount of pain that she was in from what was happening to her body, you know, because of the disease that she had. I've forgotten exactly what she had. I think it was cancer. But because of the amount of pain that she was in, she was on one of the highest doses of morphine
Oh, so she wouldn't have been in sound mind and body when she signed the contract.
Exactly. And the day she signed the contract, she'd actually had a massive dose of morphine that had been administered to her by the hospital, right? And that was the day that she signed those contracts as well, which means she wasn't of sound mind and body when she signed the contract, so Hedy has no leg to stand on. And Hedy's suddenly going, oh, well, we've been friends for years, Patsy, because she knows she's lost.
Yeah.
You know, and Patsy suddenly realizes, because Jessica actually says, it's no wonder your mum was talking about marrying demons and stuff like that. She didn't have a clue what she was saying. But Patsy always thought that was her mum's true intentions. But realizing that her mum actually didn't have a clue what she was saying in the first place is one of the things that I think is one of the big important points. But they do it in such a subtle way. You know, they basically include it as an afterthought to the whole contract business. But I think that's one of the things that will become quite a prominent thing later on. But yeah, Patsy gets her rights back.
Right, she now owns the rights to Hellcat and Patsy Walker.
Well, it's kind of nice because they give her a greeting card and a cake that's shaped like, you know, her mask.
Yeah.
They give her a cake like that and a greeting card. And in the greeting card, on the greeting card, it says Patsy Walker on the front. And inside it says, all rights reserved.
Nice.
And I thought that was a nice way to end it. Shame about the art. Real shame about the art. But the strength of the story, I reckon they had to do this because we know what's going to happen to Jennifer.
Yeah, they've got to get everything all wrapped up.
Yeah. So I reckon they had to do this and they had to do the whole thing with Patsy's mum and the revelation of what was actually going on to basically give Patsy that little bit of a buffer, because if she loses Jennifer, who's actually one of her closest friends at this point in time, I think that's going to be devastating for Patsy's character.
Yeah, until she, you know, saunters over to hell and...
Yeah, because we did talk about this and, you know, because we don't know the full extent of Patsy's abilities. We just know she's been dead and got better. So there is a possibility that Patsy Walker could end up as like one of those Greek heroes that we were talking about, going into the underworld and rescuing Jennifer.
Well, plus now she has all that book revenue, so she'd probably just hand over a credit card and go, one She-Hulk, please.
Yes, the Hellcat card. Don't leave home without it.
Is that like the Batman credit card?
Yes. But yeah. It's an interesting time for Patsy Walker at the moment. Just please sort out the artwork.
I mean, no, that was just like a one-issue guest artist.
I'm hoping it was.
They will never give work to ever again.
I'm hoping it was. I mean, there's one panel in this that just... they do the typical kind of chibi anime face with the single triangular tooth. And I looked at it and went, she's an adult woman! You don't do this image for an adult woman.
Yeah, like they all look like five-year-olds.
Exactly.
Bit of a random thing that I've been getting into just kind of over the past few days while I've been, you know, stuck at home with the old back pain. Exiles.
Okay.
So this was a series from 2001, actually, is when it started. Basically, the idea is it's a bunch of X-Men from alternate realities who get taken out of reality and have to, like, go around various Earths, of setting the time stream right.
Okay.
Like, in the first issue, they kind of explain it. Basically, time is a living organism, and like a living organism, sometimes it gets faulty genes, things that need to be put right for the rest of the time stream to keep on keeping on.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Kind of.
Yeah. Basically, they are, like, alternate reality chemotherapy for all of existence.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Yeah. So, busy, got a bunch of assembled characters. You have got the leader's Blink from the Age of Apocalypse. You've got Mimic from an Earth where, like, he is the leader of the X-Men. You've got Morph, who is technically, he's another Age of Apocalypse character, but it's from, like, a different alternate. Morph is quite confusing to explain. Basically, he was a character introduced in, like, way back in the 1960s for all of 5 minutes, who then died. But then he got completely reimagined in the Age of Apocalypse to basically be, like, the Marvel version of Plastic Man. And so they've kind of brought him back for Exiles, but sort of from a different reality.
Okay.
So sort of the same character, but, like, he doesn't know who Blink is. Then you've got Nocturne, who is Nightcrawler's daughter. and so is Automatically Awesome.
Okay.
Thunderbird from a reality where he didn't die and became a Horseman of Apocalypse.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice for a horseman.
It actually makes a lot of sense because he became war.
Actually, that fits really well with Thunderbird's character as well.
Yeah, because his whole thing was like, he was a really angry guy.
But he was a warrior as well. You know, unlike the rest of the X-Men, because he was part of the X-Men, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For a little bit.
Yeah, before he died.
Yeah. And unlike the rest of the X-Men, he was one of the few who was actually a proper dyed-in-the-wool warrior.
Yeah, like he would kill people.
Yeah.
If he got the chance, but he didn't because he died. And then finally, round at the team is Magnus, who is the son of Magneto and Rogue from an alternate universe.
Mm.
Basically, he's sort of got his father's magnetism powers, but on a much stronger scale. And like, I think it's quite interesting how that's combined with Rogue's powers, because one of his abilities is if you make skin contact with someone, he turns them to steel. So he's got to wear like a full body suit thing. So yeah, they get assembled and have to go save the universe. And like, their first mission is they get sent to an Earth where there are basically no superheroes. Kind of all of humankind turned against them. All the superheroes have been either killed or locked up. And they get told their mission objective is to save the man who can teach them all. And so being X-Men, their first thought is, well, obviously, Charles Xavier. He is the greatest teacher on the planet. We'll go save him. And they do. They break him out, kind of smash off this weird telepathy blocker thing. And he immediately knocks them all into a coma and goes to try and destroy the Earth.
Because it's Magneto, then.
Yeah. It's Magneto. It's the guy they were supposed to save. Because on this Earth, Professor Xavier, his years in imprisonment have turned him into a bitter, twisted old man. Wants all of humanity to suffer. So they have to stop him whilst also freeing Magneto. And straight off the bat, this is literally issue 2, Magnus dies.
Wow.
Because they find that the failsafe in Magneto's prison is a nuke made entirely out of plastic components.
Ouch.
So he basically has to like build a giant electromagnetic shield instead to just contain the blast.
Wow.
It's really sad because like part of the subtext is he sacrificed himself out of guilt because he didn't think his father would be the one who could teach all of mankind.
Wow.
And that's kind of the great thing about Exiles. It is really one of those anyone could die kind of comics.
This is something that I think I'm going to have to read because I like it when comics actually have that finality to them. I like it when comics have that, look, there is a real risk of actual death, you know?
Yeah, and you know, because these are characters who probably aren't going to get featured really anywhere else.
Yeah.
That's it. If they die, they're gone. They're dead-ed-ed.
Mm. I think I'm going to have to read Exiles.
Yeah, it's got some really interesting concepts. It's like, I think I'm up to about issue 5-ish. And one of the ones I just said, they go to an alternate universe where Thunderbird meets Shaman, who's an alternate version of himself, but who instead got taken in by the previous Shaman.
Yeah.
Who's like a member of Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
Plus he taught more about like respecting nature and being calmer. So you've got this guy who's like sees himself as a living weapon, meaning a version of himself is like who's found inner peace.
That's going to be a weird conversation.
Yeah. Like they spend most of it just kind of talking to each other.
See, I like that. See, this is the thing. Exile sounds like exactly my type of comic where they're exploring ideas and concepts that they just don't do in normal superhero comics.
Yeah, plus it's nice because like most of the universes they visit, they get to like flip things on the head.
Yeah. Do you know, it's a bit like Sliders, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's basically Sliders, but with X-Men.
I'm beginning to like this idea more and more.
Oh, yeah. Like basically, the entire thing is spread out from the idea, basically making a comic book in which Blink can be a character. Because I know, back in the day, she was like the most popular character in the Age of Apocalypse.
Yes, she was.
But yeah, I love the characters, because I love Blink.
Yeah.
And Nocturne is awesome, because she's Nightcrawler's daughter.
What does she do, anyway? What can she do? Is she a teleporter as well? Or?
No, she's got... Because she's the Lord of Nightcrawler and the Scarlet Witch. So her main power is she can actually possess people.
She's the daughter of Nightcrawler and the Scarlet Witch?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Well, alternate universe. They have the same response as like, what are those two getting together? And then she explains, well, you know, they're both mutants. Both like have gypsy heritage. It actually makes a lot of sense.
Actually, it does.
Yeah, it is. Like, when you think about it, oh, yeah, that, they make a really good pair.
It makes more sense for them two to get together than it does for Scarlet Witch to get together with Vision.
Yes.
And then possibly Wonder Man later on.
Well, reason number is this 7, why Nightcrawler is awesome.
Yes.
He has a dingly doodah. Vision does not.
This is true. Vision was built like an action man. That always confused me as to how that actually... that always confused me as to how that actually worked.
Ultron is a cruel father.
Yes. Cruel and or unusual. I still never understood why in Age of Ultron, Ultron kidnaps Black Widow. That does not make sense to me. Right. I know why you'd kidnap Black Widow.
Yes. Isn't in that film Ultron is like based off Tony Stark?
Yeah.
It's a bit worrying what that says about Iron Man then, isn't it?
That's my point, exactly.
I mean, he does have a thing for redheads.
He has a thing for redheads. He kidnaps Black Widow and then basically destroys the older version of himself with a newer, shinier version right in front of her, as if to say, look at me. Look how much mojo I've got. Look, I'm going to shake it for you now.
My codpiece is much shinier than his.
Yes.
But then her jock boyfriend comes up to beat up that robot nerd.
Yes, her jock boyfriend. Her hyper-intelligent jock boyfriend.
Actually, that is my one criticism of Exiles.
Oh.
No jock Hulk.
Really?
Really. He is not a character.
See, that's why...
I'm ashamed that no comic book writer has thought of that.
So, the thing is, he is kind of a jock now, because...
Actually, yeah, to be... Well, no, he's a total bro now.
But that's what I mean. That's what he's kind of the typical American, high school jock.
He is
now.
Frat boy Hulk.
Yeah, he is. Well, I wouldn't say fat boy.
No, frat.
Oh, frat boy, Hulk. Yeah, he is frat boy Hulk.
Literally, he has a floating robot that he calls Kegger.
Yeah. And you can just imagine him going to a party and just chugging a keg of beer while everyone's going chug, 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 chug.
Morph is like the best character though.
Okay.
He's basically like pre-Deadpool Deadpool.
Really?
Yeah. Well, not like he's like basically Deadpool mixed with Plastic Man, because he can shapeshift, and that extends like the clothes he's wearing and stuff.
Okay.
Like, I think I know the best example of it. It's actually one of the like recent ones, because in the thing where they meet Alpha Flight, it's to help them stop the Hulk.
Yeah.
And like, they encounter him in the thing, and you just see a panel of just Morph turning into a chicken and running around screaming, "It's the Hulk! It's the Hulk! It's the effing Hulk!"
Does it actually do the effing thing?
It does, like, the replacing it
with symbols. Correct number of letters, just they're all symbols
now. It's
like
the hashtag @!
Yeah.
!! Hulk.
Ampersand. They always do the ampersand as well. Anyway.
There was one significant problem with it.
Oh.
Mimic.
What's Mimic's problem?
He has a soul patch.
Aye?
He has a soul patch. Just a little bit of beard. Just on the chin.
See, when you say a soul patch, I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking it's something like a nicotine patch or something like that. It's that he doesn't have enough soul, so he has like a little patch on his arm that just constantly plays like, constantly plays like Earth, Wind and Fire or something like that. Or maybe some Marvin Gaye. Bit of Motown. A Motown patch.
Come on, Exiles. Let's get it on.
Yes. Some Barry White.
He does actually have quite interesting powers, though. He does even, like, copy up to 5 mutants, but at half their strength.
Really?
Yeah.
See, the thing is, that's actually a more interesting power than people realise, because if you can copy even just half the strength of one mutant, that's an amazing ability. But if you got the right 5 mutant powers copied, you could practically beat anybody.
Yeah, well, no, like, there's one-ish. Like, the second story arc is... they have to kill Jean Grey.
Wow.
Yeah, basically, they get sent to an Earth where it's the Trial of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
But they're told this is a universe. Jean Grey doesn't kill herself.
Yeah.
Eventually, the Phoenix takes over and she destroys the universe. So you have to kill her before that happens.
Hmm.
And Mimic ends up having to fight Wolverine. But he has the powers of Wolverine, Cyclops, and Colossus.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an impressive combination. I wonder if that's where they got the idea for that awful version of Deadpool they had.
Oh, no, it might actually have been.
Because that would make sense then. But when you think about it, I mean, I don't know. Half-strength superpowers of 5 different mutants. Half strength abilities of five different mutants. If you could have them, who would you go for?
Ooh.
Which five mutant powers would you like combined into one body?
Potentially Iceman, because I feel like he's got pretty interesting powers.
Yeah.
I know it wouldn't gel well together, but maybe Sunfire as well.
Mm-hmm. Ice and fire.
Yeah.
I actually think that would work a lot better than you think.
Because I guess if you can control the two.
Well, it's not just if you can control the two. I think the main reason being, you know, if he can balance the two more than control them, then he'd probably end up with some very, very odd abilities involving the combination of the two. Imagine if he could blend ice and fire together.
Flaming snowballs of death.
Yeah, basically.
Also, I've got the best of it to make myself like an unstoppable badass.
Yeah.
Because we also have, obviously, Wolverine for the healing factor.
Yeah, and not the adamantium claws.
No, well, actually, there's a mimic. He has, like, bone claws.
Oh, okay.
Then, now here's where it gets good. Nightcrawler.
Yes.
Multiple man.
Oh, that's clever.
Yes.
That's very clever. I like that. That is very smart.
Because suddenly I have a teleporting army of self-healing assassins with fire and ice powers. What you gonna do?
Naruto and your you know, shadow clone jutsu just had all their heads ripped off.
Yeah.
Let's see. That's very smart. I like that one. If it was me, if I was gonna take that on, I'd need a mutant with a really good area of effect attack.
Yes, you would.
Because that would be the only way to defend against the teleporting assassins, is to have an area of effect, and then I'd need another mutant with really good barrier ability. Now, since you have chosen Wolverine, I would have to go with Colossus, because the bone claws aren't going to penetrate his skin. If it was adamantium, then yeah, but adamantium isn't his ability, is it?
No, it isn't. But so what you're saying is you're giving yourself metal skin.
Yeah.
Metal skin against the guy who can, like, shoot fire from his hands.
Yeah, don't worry, that's not the only thing. Metal skin against the guy who can shoot fire from his hands, that's fine. But... What was it? I think Gambit, after he had that run-in with Mr. Sinister in the past.
Actually, even just normal Gambit, because that's your area of effect attack.
Yeah, but Gambit, after he had that run-in with Mr. Sinister, because at that point he could basically detonate organic stuff as well. Actually, no, because that'd be way too overpowered. He'd basically blow himself up at that point.
Yeah, because we also have to remember, because this is a point that makes Mimic even more interesting. He says there's a difference between having these skills and knowing how to use them.
Yeah, okay, so Colossus and Gambit. I think I'd have to go with, since you've got the fire and ice, I'm going to have to go with the wind and rain, so Storm, you know, because again, it's area of effect.
But once you've messed up using weather powers and ended up, like, wiping out all life on Earth...
Yep, so there's just me versus you.
And me and me and me and me and me and me.
Yeah,
and
me versus me. All of you. Damn it, it's a shame that Susan Storm isn't a mutant. Because that would have solved all my problems, just a force field.
Basically, just having Susan Storm's powers in general makes you kind of unstoppable.
Yeah, I know, I don't understand what... I mean, when they turned her into Malice, you know, you got a real idea of just how strong she is, but then they go back to Susan Storm, you're like... Now she's just Susan Storm again.
Well, like, even as Susan Storm, there was things called Unthinkable.
Yeah.
That one story where Doctor Doom just kind of goes all out.
Yeah.
And, like, he ends up kidnapping Franklin.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Sue just, like, makes snakes out of a force field.
Yeah.
Just, like, shoves them into his eyes.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And that's why you don't piss off Sue Storm.
Yep. Yeah, that's why you don't make her angry. Anyway, back to mine. So I've got Gambit, Colossus, Storm, See, it's pointless choosing anybody like Magneto or anyone like that. There's no point in choosing Cyclops because he, at the end of the day, he's powerful, but he's not going to be able to take on your character.
Well, plus, if you were Cyclops, you'd need something to control the eye blasts as well.
Exactly. And if you don't have those ruby quartz lenses, then there's no point at all. There's so many mutants.
Actually, no, you could have Magneto. If you have the Magneto... from one of those stories where the writer has no idea how magnetism works, and so he can make force fields.
See, rather than going with Magneto, it'd be more of an idea to go with Polaris at that point then.
Well, do they have just like the same powers?
Not quite, because Polaris had some weird kind of variation on the whole magnetic powers, didn't she?
Did she? I thought she just had the same thing.
Was it the same thing? I can't remember. It's been ages and I wasn't really a big fan of X-Factor anyway. I'm stuck. I might have to come back to this. I'm stuck. There's too many options. I automatically want to go, Jean Grey, Phoenix. But the Phoenix wasn't part of Jean Grey. Phoenix was something else, so I wouldn't get it.
Actually, I think technically you would.
Really?
Because Mimic does, like, steal half of the Phoenix's powers.
Really?
Like, he can't use them very well, but, like, enough to be able to stand up to her for a little bit.
Okay.
Because I guess it's, like, the psychic power to be able to channel the Phoenix.
Scarlet Witch's powers, but not the new Scarlet Witch, which is telekinesis-type thing, and go with old Scarlet Witch and the probability.
Yes, because Scarlet powers. Witch is a mutant. I don't care what Marvel wants to say now.
Yeah, I know. She's not an Avenger. She's a bleeding mutant. Scarlet Witch's old hex powers, the probability powers, because that would allow me some control over where you can teleport.
Yes, and then I couldn't attack you because I'd be too busy stomping on the ground screaming, but it doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
What's probability powers?
Exactly. And I think I would go with Jean Grey finally. No, actually, I'd go with Charles Xavier finally. And the reason I go with Charles Xavier is because I don't need the telekinetic abilities. I need the telepathic abilities because as soon as you teleport, I can use that as a I can use a telepathic web to detect exactly where you are. Use the hex powers to stop you appearing. There you go. My perfect defense.
Yep. Well done. That's me beat. No. Incidentally, make like 70 copies of myself, fly up, rain fire down on you.
Yeah, I know. But then again, I've got wind and rain. You can fly up if you want. I'll just basically create a tornado and cycle it all back up to you.
Fire tornado!
Yes.
The best tornado.
How do we get onto this?
I don't...
Oh, Exiles, that was
it. We got distracted by like what mutant powers we would have.
Anyway, yeah, so...
Oh, yeah, Exiles, it's really cool.
Read it.
Yes.
I will. Anyway, moving on to me then. Bruce Lee.
Yay, Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee is the thing. The Dragon Rise is a thing. And I absolutely love this comic. We talked about it on, yes. On the Free Comic Book Day special. And we found out that Bruce Lee, after he died, he was kept in stasis in a box. And all of a sudden, he got out. And he doesn't know who he is. He thinks his name might be Joe Toomey. But Joe Toomey actually turns out to be one of his former students, who recognizes him and takes him in. And so they're on a mission now to find out what's going on. And this mission can only take place on the evenings and nights because Joe has to work in a department store during the day to pay the rent. He's one of these cool old guys who really wants to be the 1970s all over again.
Because doesn't he basically just look like Shaft, but with a turtleneck and
like a cravat,
leather jacket.
Yeah, and a cravat sometimes. Yes. Yeah, he basically does, and the white hair around the back, but the little black at the top. So anyway, that's how it all starts off. And Joe finds Bruce kind of standing on a street corner because Bruce has been helped by these two kids. Right now, these two kids do start playing more of a role in the story, in the later on and in the second issue of the series. What's happened is the guy who was actually looking after the Bruce Lee box, him and his subordinate, somehow Bruce Lee escapes, they track Bruce down, and they're basically spoken to these kids who helped him as well. And the kids have basically told them everything they know. So they track Bruce down, they attack him, and then there's that whole scene that you talked about on Free Comic Book Day with the TV, everything like that. Okay. So then these guys escape. And then the scene shifts, and you have Bruce and Joe, and they're still trying to figure things out. They're trying to figure out what they do next. Meanwhile, the bad guys, I'd assume you'd call them, the main bad guy is introduced, and it's not the Japanese guy or the Chinese guy that we initially thought. I'm not talking about Nakamura, who's the one with the glasses, who goes after them in Joe Toomey's house. I'm talking about his boss. He's not the bad guy. Turns out the bad guy is actually a woman, and she has big plans. She has an idea to conquer, possibly the world. And then it shows just this picture with loads of these boxes. Every single one of them.
Bruce Lee Army.
No, that's what I thought first, but it's not. It's got loads of different people in each of these boxes, and I think these are actual famous fighters from you know, just around the world who've been kidnapped or who died and are now kept in stasis and are in the process of being brainwashed. Because the first part stage of brainwashing is wipe the memory, which is why Bruce can't remember anything. But Bruce has amazing muscle memory. And the reason why the woman wants Bruce Lee back is because he has a rare genome, which allows him to do certain things. And even Bruce isn't aware that he's able to do those things. So anyway, the bad guys go to these kids' house, and the kids are saying, look, we've told you everything. Joe fakes a pizza delivery, goes in, and, you know, they start kicking backside to try and rescue the kids. Eventually, they capture Bruce again. He's put back in the box, you know, and Joe and the two kids are being kept as prisoners. When Bruce is caught, he's basically being looked at by Nakamura's boss, right? Nakamura's boss has gone to a lot of trouble to recapture him because his reputation, his head is on the line. Because his boss, the person who he's following, who he's supporting, needs Bruce to basically lead this army to change the world for whatever reason. Bruce, however, has amazing muscle memory, as I said. And Bruce is sitting in kind of a meditative pause. And when this guy gets close to this glass or Perspex box or whatever that Bruce is being kept in, Bruce's fist comes through and grabs him.
Yes.
And basically Bruce is saying, you know, that wasn't a smart idea. And then proceeds to get into a fight with him. The guy disappears and comes back with nunchucks. He's like, you might have amazing muscle memory, Bruce, but I will defeat you now. And so there's this fight, and Bruce takes the nunchucks and then starts doing the whole nunchuck thing. I was like, yes. So they end up destroying the box, and Bruce ends up knocking this guy out, and they decide to waste the facility, right? Bruce has already thrown this guy at the computers, and the guy's basically trashed the computers. So they decide to waste that facility, and Bruce and the kids and Joe destroy this box. They basically knock seven kinds of crap out of it. They set fire to the building and drag this guy who Bruce has knocked out. But this guy somehow manages to escape. Obviously, the woman, the big boss, isn't happy at all. And Nakamura's boss says, look, I'm done. I've done everything you want me to say. You're now saying that you're going to, you know, take some action against me. I'm done. I've supported you. Just leave me out of this now. But then gives a fair warning. Oh, I'll warn you now. I'm the one who's going to take you down. And as he's leaving, Nakamura gets to stay. Right, Nakamura's happy because he's not very loyal, and his old boss knows that Nakamura's happy because he lacks loyalty, so basically gives him a really good kicking before he leaves. Moving on, the kids need Joe and Bruce's help because their dad has been missing for the past year. So Bruce and Joe now have an obligation, because the kids have helped them. They have an obligation to investigate the disappearance of their dad, which I'm pretty sure has something to do with what happened to Bruce. And so,
almost definitely.
Yeah. So Bruce and Joe are actually tracking down the people who basically put Bruce in the box and ferried Bruce around and everything like that. And they're getting answers. And I've got to say, the artwork in this is good. It's not the best, but they made Bruce Lee look like Bruce Lee. And that really is all I care about.
Like, that is what I love about the art. That's where the focus is.
Yeah.
And it is kind of amazing how much like Bruce Lee looks.
Yeah. The dialogue is actually pretty funny, especially where Joe Toomey is concerned, because he is so 70s it hurts. He is basically the epitome of that 70s show when you get right down to it.
Did he call someone a jive turkey?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Or a 70s slur of that type. He definitely calls them that. Don't worry. The kids aren't as annoying as kids I've seen in other comic books, and Bruce himself is just, you know, when he gets into fights, it's amazing because they draw him in so much. They give so much love and attention to Bruce when he's in a fight. You know, when he does a flying kick while he's got the nunchuck under one arm and he's doing the flying kick like that. I'm just like, that's so good.
That is the Bruce Lee pose.
Yeah, just like, I love that. This is basically every Bruce Lee fan's dream, and I absolutely adore it. I think it's weird because it's got a little bit of the charm of, say, Lumberjanes in it, because Bruce, he doesn't have his memory, there's an innocence about him that is just amazingly amazing and pure. You know, he doesn't actually understand. He just knows these are the bad guys, I need to beat them up. That's it. And I love the fact that there's a purity in that. That's weirdly refreshing. He doesn't have any illusions of doing it for, you know, to protect the innocent or uphold justice or anything like that. His simple logic is literally, these are the bad guys, I need to beat them up. That's it. That's really refreshing in comic books. So yeah, Bruce Lee, The Dragon Rises. I heartily recommend it. It's so much fun.
Hey, good stuff. We're at the end of the show. If you've liked what you've heard, you can find us all over the interwebs. We have our own website, which is geekshow.co.uk. We're on YouTube. We're on the cloud one.
Mixcloud.
I got confused with Mixcloud and SoundCloud. We're on that. We're on Stitcher. Did I say YouTube? I might have said
yes,
YouTube.
Yes, you said YouTube.
But we're doubly on YouTube. And you can get in contact by emailing us at studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And we are a volunteer organization, so if you want to help us out, you can check out our GoFundMe page, where you can, you know, throw some money or just share it around with your friends. Let them know what we're doing here. Or if you want something for your money, you can go to the Geek Shop, which is on the website, where we have many lovely items all for sale.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Right.
I'm coming down from the codeine, Rob.
Yes, you are. Right,
I've got the shakes. I need another hit.
Okay. We're going to leave while he gets another hit of codeine, not of like a foot or something like that. I'll introduce you to my family's homeopathic pain remedy, which is give you pain in another place of the body. Then you forget about the pain in that place.
Just like the Batman method of back surgery.
Yes.
Or punch your spine back into place.
Yeah. Or hang upside down. Hang upside down for several days. That's what does it, apparently, as well. If the Dark Knight,
yes.
If the Dark Knight Rises is to be believed. I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all next week. Take care, have fun, read more comics.
And thanks for listening.